Hi everyone, welcome back to my podcast series. Welcome to the Winner's Circle. I know it's been a while since the last episode, but I'm back. Today I have a special guest. Her name is Erica Lachey. Some of you probably have heard of her, but she's here today on my episode, and we're just going to talk a little bit about what it's like to be a Black woman and tapping into your divinity and just your creativity and your talents and things of that nature. So hi Erica, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good. Thank you for being on this episode, for being here tonight.
No problem.
Okay, awesome. So just a little bit of background, everybody. I met Erica. She was on tour with Justin Blue, and I believe the event was Divine Healing, and that was just kind of them touring different cities here in the States and kind of just having, I guess if you want to call it like an assembly or something of that nature, where we just kind of all sat down as a Black community and talked about just different things that should be talked about within our community and how we can fix some of the issues and just how we deal with ourselves as a people and then also as individuals. So that's where I met Erica. Then I also follow her on social media as well. So it's really great to just be able to have her on this episode. So we want to kind of talk about tonight, just what I had mentioned before. So Erica, do you want to go ahead and chime in and just talk a little bit about that event when you were here in Brooklyn?
Yeah. So the event, it was just basically about balance between, Black men and Black women and how we can like just come together to make our communities better, because I feel like there's a lot of internal and external forces that keep us at odds with each other, and right. And with that we're not progressing the way that we could progress. So we just talked about, you know, some of those issues and some tips and just some things that could help in regards to like building ourselves up and building up our businesses and our community. So it was very broad, a lot of the stuff that we spoke on, but we both believe that it would be, myself and Justin, we believe that it would be beneficial to discuss some of these things, you know.
Right, definitely. I would say I felt like for me, one of the takeaways for me was that it was a family event. So when I attended, I was with my kids. And one of the things that I had said for me and my children was like 2020, I want to bring them around other individuals who not only say the same things that I say, but so they can actually see it in person for their own eyes and hear it from somebody else who looks like them. So right. For me, I took away that it was a great family event. A lot of the conversation, again, was about our community. And I think, you know, whether if even though the conversations were generalized or anything like that, it was so great to have, because we don't have, in my opinion, we don't have much of those, you know, those congregations anymore happening too much. We see it more like in our grandparents' generation, but I feel like nowadays you don't see it as much. And it's nice to have something like that.
We specifically wanted it to be an event where children could come, because it's the most beneficial when children get information young, as opposed to having to learn things older and relearn and unlearn certain things. It's best to have an understanding young, so that once you get older, you already know certain things and you've been able to, you know, put what you've learned into use, you know?
Right.
And
right.
I feel like our communities, that's something that is lacking. Like we don't get hit to credit and, you know, just financial tips and budgeting and all that until we're adults and our credit is already messed up,
you know? I know.
when that could have been something that, you know, was taught to us at a young age, so when by the time we got to be adults, we were responsible with it, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. So have you ever envisioned yourself kind of being a public speaker in a sense at all?
Not necessarily. That wasn't something that I imagined I would be doing on such a broader scale, I suppose. My main passion, to be honest, is music. So I guess that's a form of getting information out just in a different way. Right. But I did speak, you know, younger when I in churches and things, I would, be over Sunday school and just certain other things. I would have to give the sermon some Sundays, depending on what was going on. But that was just something that I did, you know, at churches. It wasn't necessarily something I thought I would, you know, be doing on a kind of regular basis. So it kind of just happened.
For me, right, it kind of like naturally evolved into your life. Like, this is just what you're going to do right now. Right. Yeah. Okay. And then, so when you came to Brooklyn, was that your first time coming to Brooklyn, or what was your experience like being here for that event?
Yes, it was. It was my first time in New York and my first time in Brooklyn. And I enjoyed it. It's similar to California. Well, Los Angeles, I'll say. It's similar to Los Angeles, but not at the same time. It's very, very fast paced, like how downtown LA is. But everything is close. And that's like the opposite of LA. Like, LA is super spread out. It takes forever to get anywhere. And things are relatively close in the New York area is what I've noticed. But they're similar and different in that regard. But just the energy is different as well. People seem a lot more... a lot less concerned about, I won't say what other people are thinking, but it's not like a place where people are trying to have like the fanciest cars. You know, everybody is taking the train. People are just getting things done as opposed to like trying to be very flashy, which is more so like an LA thing. So, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed myself. I enjoyed being, being in Brooklyn and just seeing everything. And just there's so many different black owned businesses all around, and that was one another thing that I appreciated about being there.
Yeah, especially the area in Bed-Stuy, Bedford-Stuyvesant, where the event was held. That is right now part of it is under gentrification, but there's still some parts of it that is kind of like how it was back in the day. Strong black community, a lot of black owned businesses, and that's something I've observed myself. I mean, I'm not even from New York. Like, I didn't grow up in Brooklyn or New York City or anywhere. I'm actually from Boston. But just like coming to Brooklyn and just being an out of state or out of towner, you kind of see things with a different lens. And so when I came to Brooklyn and I started learning the different neighborhoods and the different areas, that's something that I picked up from that neighborhood in particular. And then, of course, you know, I grew up watching Spike Lee movies. So it was always Crown Heights and Bed-Stuy were like the two neighborhoods that he highlighted in a lot of his films that were based in Brooklyn.
Right.
Okay. And did you notice anything different about specifically about the black people in Brooklyn versus the black people in Los Angeles or anything about that?
Well, I would say that people, because what I've heard is that like New York people in general are aggressive. I won't say aggressiveness, but there's just like a focus. But if you do talk to someone, it seems like they're not like jerks. You know what I'm saying? Like, they will communicate and speak back, you know, and be cordial with you. And that is a little different from like, I won't say California as a whole, but the LA area. People aren't as talkative. So it was a difference there. People will, they'll talk, but I did enjoy like the energy of the people in the Brooklyn area. They were a lot down to earth and you know, just down to earth.
That's good. That's good to hear. My cousin, she stayed with me a couple years ago. She lives in California too, but majority of my family, they live further up north, like in Oakland and San Francisco, and those areas. And so she came to stay with me a little bit, and her kind of takeaway between both places, like San Francisco and I guess, you know, New York City as a whole, it was that New York City was fast paced, almost like California, but there was still some difference of like people's attitudes a little bit and just, you know, New York people. It was just different for her. And all in all, she wound up moving back to California, and that's where she is now. But I think she says she misses New York, but I think she likes that California feel better. And, you know, I've gone out to visit on the West Coast in Oakland years ago, but just, you know, the vibe is just different over there anyway. So definitely when you come back to the East Coast, you can feel the difference a little bit.
It is. It's a different vibe. I mean, the people, it's different, and I'm not trying to, like, you know, go in on where I come from or anything like that, but it's just that there's a lot of people that are trying to make something of themselves. And I'm not saying that's not the case in New York, but in Los Angeles, right. You see that a lot. Like, you go places and people will be standoffish until they think you know somebody, and then they want to be more friendly, you know. And that's not the case all the time, because there's some really dope people with, like, dope energy. But you do get that a lot where, you know, it is a different vibe, but there's genuine people everywhere. And one of the things that I do like about California is just where it's placed, like the weather and the scenery. Like, everything that we want is in, I don't know, maybe like a 30-mile radius, whether it's mountains, snow, beach, desert. Like, you can get all of it within a 30-mile radius, depending on which direction you drive.
Right, that's true. I like the desert too. So I've gone to Vegas a number of times, and I always enjoyed it because, oddly enough, I like the desert. So, I know that there's a lot of things that, you know, that have to be discussed in our community and with our women and our men and our children, and I feel like every topic is so important. Like, I feel like you can't have one without the other, in a sense.
Right.
But do you feel like there's one that really sticks out to you that you kind of resonate with, or that is kind of like, this is your focus when it comes to your people?
I feel like I've always had a soft spot, particularly for Black men. And it has a lot to do with how I was brought up. You know, I don't have any biological sisters, and I have four brothers. And so they were, you know, in this system, you know, going back and forth to court and things of that nature over, you know, little things, violation of probation, you know, things of that nature. And it wasn't crazy things that they were, you know, getting arrested for. But when I would go to court to support them because they're my family. And each time, you know, I don't know if you've ever, like, sat in a courtroom and waited for, you know, someone to come out. But you have to sit through a lot of different cases, and each person, it was always a young Black man. And then everyone that was judging him, the bailiffs, everybody else, was not Black. And he would get sentenced or whatever. And that's like another brother, husband, father, son, uncle, whatever, being taken away from his family, you know? And so, that really bothered me. Like, I'd be in the courthouse crying, and my brother, it wouldn't even be my brothers, because just seeing this consistently over and over again. So that had a lot to do with how I feel about Black men, and how I feel like there's, I mean, we're all fought, Black men, Black women, and Black children. We all have our own struggles, but I feel like the struggle of the Black man is something he has to endure alone for the most part. Like, Black women, we'll say different things, and, you know, our concerns will be addressed. You know, we have better opportunities when it comes to getting housing and loans and jobs, especially. And our men have a harder time with those type of things. And their concerns are just, you know, lumped into patriarchy, and they're told to, like, stop crying about it and do something, you know, and just and be men, and they don't have the luxury of even just stating that they have problems without somebody making them out to be less of men for saying that. So I feel like the only time we really do campaign for Black men is once they've already been killed or murdered by the police. But while they're yet alive, we treat them like thugs and criminals. So yeah, I do. Right. I have a particular soft spot for Black men. You know, I care for the whole Black community, Black women, Black children, but I do have, I put an emphasis on Black men.
Yeah, I agree with you there a little bit too. I feel the same way. I have, for me, it is like the whole community, like the whole family unit. They all have a soft spot, but I also do feel like for the Black men, it is highlighted because I feel like they're so much of a target more than anyone else for many different reasons. And, you know, it just kind of is just something that, you know, you want to stand up and you want to support them and you want to show them that they have your support. Mm-hmm. So they can also feel like they've got a, you know, a crutch or someone to lean on or just someone who is looking out for them too. Right. So do you feel like with your voice and, you know, just how you speak at events and just, you know, your videos on social media and things of that nature, do you feel like your voice has benefited you? Like, have you been presented with opportunities for public speaking? How do you feel like social media has influenced or contributed into your life, or have made, like, have kind of guided you in different decisions, you know, that you make in your life, maybe that you wouldn't make on a normal basis?
I do feel like it has benefited me. You know, I'm not going to front in that regard. Mm-hmm. There's been more people who see and hear the things that I'm talking about and they agree, and they may be in positions to help me more than, you know, someone who may not have been in that particular position. So it has had its advances. Just the biggest struggle with it is just remaining genuine. It's like, despite who follows me or who DMs me or whatever,
right?
Who, you know, regardless of that, is just to stay the same. It doesn't change because of different eyes that are looking. So that's the biggest part, because it is like it's a good thing and it's a bad thing at the same time. It definitely has its benefits, but then people begin to dehumanize you. Like, I'm no longer an individual person who has emotions and has like the ability to have days where I just don't feel like dealing with mess or nonsense.
Right.
People expect for me to always talk about certain things just because they want it to be covered or addressed. And if I am feeling some type of way, if I'm dealing with some sort of pain or heartbreak or whatever, none of that matters. Like, I'm, you know, like, it's like you almost become a machine, you know? So, so it has its positives and its negatives. And as long as I like don't play into either side as much, then I'm straight. You know, I was told, to not pay too much attention to the criticism or the praise, because both can go to your head and negatively affect you. So,
I was going to say, I get overwhelmed. I mean, I'm not even on your status, I feel like, when it comes to social media, but I get overwhelmed with like some of the notifications that I get, like the DMs, and just, I don't know, my phone is just always going off, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or something else. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, oh my God. So it becomes so much that I don't even check the notification for like a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And I'll just leave it. So I can only imagine, you know, what it's like for you. And I think it is true for individuals. It's like, once you kind of put it out there that like you have a voice and you express yourself, you articulate clearly, and, you know, you're strong minded, people do expect you to speak on certain topics or like everything that's happening, or they kind of look to you to be like, in a sense, like the news, and like, what does she think about this, and all those kind of different things.
Right.
I could definitely see like a pressure affiliated with that, and how that could make somebody just feel like overwhelmed and just a lot happening.
Yeah. No one likes to be put into a box. You know, I'm not a one-dimensional person. Like, the only thing that's going on in my life is like whatever tragedy is in front of Black people. Like, that's it, according to other people, you know, and that's not the case at all. Like, there's so many other things that I do and that I enjoy. And, and I'm not going to like fit into anybody's box. You know, I'm going to continue to say what I want to say and speak on things that I feel like pertains to me. Cause another thing that I try not to do is speak on things I know nothing about. Like, if I'm not, if I don't know something, I'm not going to talk about it. Like, why would I do that? Just because people want my opinion. I don't have enough information to form an intelligent opinion. So I'm not going to speak on it, you know? So, so those type of things is like, you know, it's difficult, but it is a good thing, because I've met a lot of people that I wouldn't have met if things hadn't gone how they're going now.
Right.
And some really beneficial things are happening. I'm starting a podcast. I don't want to speak too much on it before like mm-hmm. the details come out, but it will be coming probably in November, and I'm going to have like a co-host.
That's awesome.
So it's going to be it's going to be a good thing. And then more with on the music aspects, meeting more people who like what I talk about and want to help, just because you know, the things that I say and the things I believe. So it has its benefits as well.
Good. That's good. Now I have a question for you. I know maybe like a year or two ago, you took, you did a trip and you went to Brussels. I don't know where else you went in Europe, but what was your take on your trip to Brussels? Because I went there as well. Like as a Black female or the Black female American, what was your feel for that trip when you were there in Brussels and Belgium? And did you go to Paris too, or was it just Belgium and somewhere else?
Yeah, I went to Paris too.
Okay. Okay.
So that particular experience, it was different. It was a different kind of experience, but it let me know that we as Black people are more so connected than we think we are, you know, across the world, because like Black people we're disenfranchised everywhere. Like you can see it, whether you're in Europe or whether you're in Northern Africa or in the Americas, like you see just the different treatment, you know, and that was the most interesting part about that. I wasn't a big fan of Belgium, I'll say. I'm a huge like weather person, so did not look nice out there.
Yeah, when I went, it was in the summer, and I was there in August. I did some days in Brussels, and I did some days in Paris, and everybody was like, it is not usually this nice out at this time. You really lucked out. But I know what you mean, because literally my very last day when I was going to the airport to come back to the States, that's when it was like that wet, rainy weather, and it was chilly out, gloomy out. Yeah.
Hailing. It was just crazy. And I was only in Belgium. I didn't go to Brussels. I was in, I think it's called Liège, Belgium.
Okay.
But I was there because the person I was with at the time, he was touring, and I went to see him perform at a couple of venues.
Oh, nice.
So that's why I was there. But so I didn't really get to experience much of Belgium, just a couple different places in the area that we were in Liège. But I was in Paris for a few days, and that was nice. But what I learned about traveling is that like we as Black people, we need to do it. We need to travel, even just we need to get out and go other places, because when you go to like places like Europe or you go to Africa, like I know we like to say that like we're from Africa, like people ask us, oh, we're Africans or we're from Africa. You're not going to be able to give that answer outside the States, because people are going to ask you like, what country are you from? Algeria? Are you from Ghana? Yeah. Are you from Nigeria?
Exactly. Like they want specifics.
Yeah. You can't just say that, you know. You have to understand that like we are Black people in this country, but we are Americans. You know what I'm saying? And that American passport, like we'll never feel privilege. We'll never get to understand what privilege is in America. But with that American passport, when you travel abroad, you finally get to see a little piece of what privilege is like. Because
definitely,
you know, so I feel like that's a good experience to have. And just to go someplace where your primary language is not the main one that's being spoken is good too, because it's humbling and it makes you more understanding of other people who don't speak English as a primary language.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. When I was in Brussels in Matonge, it's a predominantly Congolese and Rwandan neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And just going around the neighborhood, I went to the hair shop. The African lady did my hair for me. But instantly it was like, oh, you're African-American, you know, you're from America, Brooklyn, New York. And what country are your, you know, your grandparents from? What country are your parents? Like, they really want to narrow it down.
Right.
Because it's so big for them that they can actually narrow it down back to way back to when.
Right.
And it definitely is something that is expected of us to know. And it is true. Like, you know, you can't go abroad and just say, hey, it's a blanket kind of thing. Like, you have to have the specifics.
Right.
But I did feel that they were so welcoming to me. That was my experience, that when I went to the hair shop, when I went to those, you know, heavily Rwandan neighborhoods or Congolese neighborhoods, they were just so welcoming. And then even outside of those neighborhoods, just being that the city was just kind of just a culture hub anyway, it was just so welcoming. Like, everybody was just so accepting, even in Paris as well. It was very cultural.
Right.
So I thought it was a really good experience. And it is, like you said, it is humbling to hear another language. And I know very little French. So I did try to practice when I was in both places. But I'll be honest, I did struggle. And, you know, I got my point across, but, you know, I did struggle. But it does put you in a different position when it's not you, you're out of your comfort zone. And I think that's good in terms when somebody's trying to grow, like, just get a little bit out of your comfort zone, challenge yourself just a little bit.
Right.
So I think that's good. And then, so you went to Morocco, and how was that?
The Morocco experience was really nice as well. I went with One Love Travel Club, which is a Black owned travel company. And, and so I enjoyed that experience. The architecture was unlike anything I've ever seen before. It was very beautiful. That was even more of a culture shock. Like, things are totally different there. You know, the way that you eat, the food, the definition of salad and all of that, nothing is the same as it is, you know, here in America. So it was, but it was different in a good way. Like, they had actual, like, real food and fruits and vegetables with seeds in it still. So that aspect of it I really liked, and I liked the architecture. The people, there was less people that spoke any English at all, because when you get there, like, they're not, you don't get a lot of, I guess, American tourists in Northern Africa. So they expect you to either speak French, and if you don't speak French, they think you speak Arabic. So it's either one or the two. So I struggled more out there, but I appreciated it. I appreciated it because it pushed me to learn, you know, French. Now, I'm not a fluent French speaker or anything like that. I'm yet learning. learning how to speak French. But you know, I just felt like you know, we as Americans, sometimes we go to other countries and, you know, we have a reputation for being, like, pompous and arrogant because we expect everybody to speak English when they don't, in their own home country, and they don't have to, you know. So so I you know, put upon myself to want to learn so that I'm not the typical arrogant American. But I did enjoy it. The one thing that I didn't like, of course, is the colonization aspects. There would be a lot of paintings and statues of the Moors, and of course they had black skin, and they would be wearing, like, white clothing, white robes, and no one had explanations for that. You know, they would always say that, oh, it was artistic liberties and things of that nature. They didn't want to give credit to the fact that the Moorish people came up from sub-Saharan Africa. They came up from Senegal and civilized all of Europe, you know. So but, you know, if you go there and you understand the actual true history of things, it'll give you a lot of pride, and you'll see that the greatness of Black people is worldwide, and we're indigenous to this entire earth, not just Africa, not just the Americas, but we have the whole world, we're indigenous to it.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds like a great experience. Just to be there and see that, and to feel that. Okay, well, you also do many other things. which is great as well. Like, you have music, like you had mentioned. I believe you make jewelry. Mm-hmm. Just kind of going in, on a different way of talking about, like, tapping into someone's creativity. Like, what seed was planted for you that allowed you to tap into your creative self? Like, what was it that kind of, where you kind of, like, had the light bulb go off and say, like, okay, this is what I'm into, like, this is my creative self. What was that for you?
I think that came from my parents, like the things that they instilled in me when I was younger. My dad always has this attitude of figure it out. Like, if I come to him and ask him something, yeah, his response is figure it out, you know? So it's like, I never really was able to make excuses for things I didn't know. You know, I had to figure them out. So that's what I would do. And my parents, like my mom would always tell me and my brothers that we were smart and intelligent and brilliant, you know. So I heard that a lot growing up. So I figured if I needed to do something that, or I needed something done, that I could just do it myself. The earrings
right.
came about. I started making jewelry when I was 8 because I just wanted, you know, something different. Like, I like to be different. So I started making jewelry then, and just sewing things, because I've always liked to, just have things that are different and they look different. And I don't think mm-hmm. that I'm necessarily going to get that from someone else. So, you know, of course, figure it out and do it myself and just started making things. And so that's where that came from. Then I started wire wrapping jewelry as I got older, into my 20s. And people liked my jewelry, so I started selling it. So that's how right. that aspect came along. The music side was actually rooted in church. My father wanted me to learn how to play the piano so that I can play for the church and, you know, help okay. with the choir and things of that nature. So initially, that's why I learned how to play the piano. And that's what I did. I directed the choir. I led praise and worship mm-hmm. and was the head musician at my parents' church.
Oh, wow. That's a big role.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, yeah, I was going to say your earrings, like, I've seen your earrings and your work. It's very intricate and detailed. And
thank you.
It's nice. It's very pretty. And the wires, do you use copper only, or what kind of metals do you use for the wire bending?
Yeah, I use copper because it's a lightweight metal. It's not something that's going to be too heavy that'll pull it on, you know, on the earlobe or anything like that. And then copper mm-hmm. has a lot of really good health benefits. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's things that we could put near or on our body that could either help us or hurt us, you know? And so anything that I make, whether or not it's earrings, whether or not it's skincare products, whatever it is that I'm making, I never want it to be anything that's going to be harmful. So I chose copper for that reason. It has a lot mm-hmm. of really good healing properties and helps with the magnetism in the body if it is touching the skin.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that you don't see too much of, like, before, like, years ago. I remember as a little girl, I always had a lot of copper jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that was so big. Every time me and my mom, we would go to, like, flea markets or bazaars or, you know, yard sales and things. And I would see a lot of copper jewelry, and it would just be like the norm, like how you see silver and gold and mm-hmm. different variations of gold. But I noticed as the years went on, you don't see the copper jewelry too much anymore. Mm-hmm. And if you do see the copper jewelry, it is definitely something that is handmade,
right.
More just, you know, from someone versus like in a store or anything like right. that. And I always kind of found that a little bit interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, I'm not sure why copper is not something like that's widely sold, like how gold and silver is. Right. But yeah, I've rarely see copper jewelry. I might see rose gold, and it has like that copper looking color to it.
Right.
But not right. necessarily copper jewelry in jewelry stores.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so now you do your own music. The piano is kind of what sparked that for you.
Right.
And then being the choir director in your parents' church. Mm-hmm. When did you decide that was something, like, was it something that you did growing up because you were doing it in the church and then you took a break and kind of decided to go back to it as an adult? or was it something that you did in the church and you kind of just kept it going and you're just still doing it now?
Yeah, it's something that I've done consistently. Mm-hmm. When I learned initially how to play the piano, and that's why I will advocate for anyone learning a musical instrument, because it has so many benefits for the mind. I became mm-hmm. hooked. So initially my dad wanted me to do it, but once I started to learn and I started actually making music, it was mine. It wasn't something that my father wanted me to do anymore. This was my thing. And I feel like if you are a true musician, then it takes hold of you and it becomes a part of who you are. And you hear it in everything, and it never really leaves you. So it's not something that you can really walk away from, in a sense. So that is a huge, major part of who I am, the musical side. And and that's actually what I wrote like my senior paper on when I was in high school. I had to do like senior paper and the presentation, and my whole presentation was about the effects of music on the brain, like what learning a musical instrument, how it changes mm-hmm. your brain, because it legitimately changes how your brain processes information, and it changes like mm-hmm. the dents in the crevices that is formed in the brain. You could tell.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can tell, like, if a person passes away and they have an autopsy, you could tell by looking at the brain whether or not they played a musical instrument, because it changes your brain. Wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So is the piano, is that the only instrument you play, or do you play other instruments as well?
Yeah, I play other instruments. The piano was not the first instrument I actually learned how to play. I learned how to play percussion instruments first. So my first instrument was actually mm-hmm. the marimba. I don't know. A lot of people might not know.
That sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. I have like a visual, but I don't know. I'm not going to say I know exactly what it is.
Right.
I haven't heard that in like years. So
yeah, the marimba is like a big wooden piano in a sense. It has like wooden keys. It's not like, it doesn't have like the strings and things that a piano has, but it has the wooden keys and you hit them with like mallets, and the mallets would normally be covered with like some sort of a fabric. But that's what a marimba looks like. So I learned how to play that. The vibraphone is another type of marimba like instrument, except it's metal. So it has a different sound to it. It has a more, mm-hmm. you'll hear vibraphone a lot of time in like jazz songs. So I learned like mostly those instruments. Hand drums is something else I learned how to play, like the djembe drum, things of that nature. I also know how to play the violin as well. I'm not a very good violinist, but I do own a mm-hmm. violin and know how to play it.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you. So you write your own music, you play instruments, and you have a new song out called Water Me. Mm-hmm. And I think before that you had another song out called Ghost in the Next Room. Right. Can you talk a little bit about those songs? Like, what was the inspiration behind it?
With Water Me, I just, I wrote it because I felt like, I just wanted to express like the certain things that I felt like was necessary in a relationship, you know? Mm-hmm. If you're with someone like, and you both want to grow together, then you both should be watering each other. And I feel like a lot of music nowadays, I won't say most R&B, because there's a lot of really good R&B music and R&B artists that are out right now. But a lot of mainstream music doesn't put an emphasis on like what a relationship could do to you mentally and emotionally, like how it could mature you and grow you in that sense. A lot of emphasis is placed just on the physical, you know, it's very sexual by nature. And so I wanted to make a song that put more of the emphasis on like the beauty of the mental and spiritual aspects, just to kind of romanticize the idea of relationships, because our culture is steeped in this hookup culture type of stuff, or, you know, side mm-hmm. chicks, and we just talking, no titles, no labels, all that other type of weird stuff, you know, that people are doing instead of actually being in productive, committed relationships. So that was the reasoning for Water Me. And
Yeah, I got that from listening to it. I definitely got that feeling that it wasn't about a physical kind of thing. It was more like a mental, emotional, kind of like a give and take with you and your partner. And then you guys kind of working together in a sense to kind of build and grow together. And that was a way to show love and just kind of watering each other, like the song is called.
Yeah, that was definitely the emphasis with that song. And I'm glad that that message was conveyed, you know, in it was, you know, was received properly. As far as Ghosts in the Next Room, that song is just about I won't even call it a mistake, but a lesson that I learned. You know, I've always been really reserved. And so with Ghosts in the Next Room, I just decided to, you know, do what I wanted to do, what I felt like would, I just wanted to do what I wanted to do. You know, I've been good all these years. Right. Let me just go out, you know, and swipe my little hole card. And I know that sounds terrible, but that's what I felt at the time. Like, I got one swipe out of this, and I'm gonna use it. And this guy, he seems very nice, and we've been talking, and he's cool and whatnot. And so with that particular song, I gave myself to someone quicker than I normally would, and I felt the ramifications of that. And the reason why I wrote a song about it is because I feel like people need to understand that there's a weight that comes with giving yourself and opening yourself up to somebody. You know, we have a lot of songs that glorify just hooking up, you know, and, you know, just, you know, like there's no emotional attachment with that, you know, like after you listen to these songs where people are glorifying, just hooking up or just, you know, having this little one night we was at the club and we hooked up or whatever the case may be. No one ever talks about the after effects, how you feel after you've done that, you know? And so,
yeah, nobody talks about the soul ties and those energies that kind and of just how
you feel. You feel raggedy afterwards, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
because, you, you know, like, you're like, okay, I didn't let this person into my body and now, like, they just gone. Like, what is this? So, you know, it was a very open and honest thing, but I felt like it was necessary. Like, if I'm gonna have this experience, I shouldn't just sit on it. I should at least be able to, like, warn some other people so they don't do the same thing that I did, you know. So,
well, I think it's good too, in a sense, because it shows that, you know, you are human, and so you have relatable experiences that somebody can definitely relate to. And then you never know who's hearing it, so it could be the next, you know, somebody, a girl in high school who might be in a particular predicament and she hears a song or what have you. So I think it's good that you have something like Water Me Out, and then you also have Ghosts in the Next Room. I feel like they're two totally different ends of the spectrum in a sense, but they're also at the same time, like one is a lesson that can lead you to the next one in a way. So
that's true.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So I guess my next question for you, or just something we could talk about, is do you feel Black women have to operate at a certain standard? And what is that standard, if you feel like there is a standard for Black women when it comes to relationships, when it comes to just, you know, professional relationships, when it comes to work or businesses, family relationships? Like, do you feel as Black women we have this standard that we have to uphold to?
I do. I feel like Black women, we have a standard that that's actually detrimental for us. I feel like our standard is this idea of us being strong, independent Black women. And while it sounds like a compliment, it's actually us trying to live up to this unattainable level. And we're like legit buckling under the weight of this expectation, you know. Yes, we are strong, you know, and we can be independent, but it's not necessarily healthy to be like that all the time. Like, if you flexed your muscle 24/7 and you never let it relax, it would start to disintegrate, you know. It would break down because that's not how it's supposed to be used. Now, our strength as Black women isn't something that we should have to use all the time. But we're getting burnt out because we this is what we believe we have to be, strong and independent, and we adhere to the standard. And a lot of us, it comes out in other ways, like whether or not we have physical ailments, whether or not we're unable to have productive relationships, whether or not we have weird or strange relationships with our children because we're having to work all the time and we're not able to build certain connections with them or with other people. I do feel like there's a standard that we have, and it's one that's actually unrealistic and detrimental to us. And we take it because it sounds like a compliment, but it's something that we're legit struggling under, you know?
Right. I agree. I was going to say something along the same lines, that it is like a double-edged sword. Like it works for you and it works against you. I feel like with that, you know, that standard, like that stereotype that we have as Black women, when we do say no, or if we do say I need help with something, and we're not just all taking care of it by ourselves, we're kind of looked upon like, oh, well, why can't you handle it? Or it will work against us. We're like, well, say if you have a traumatic experience, nobody's going to listen to what you went through or how you're feeling with that experience, because you're supposed to be able to handle it. You're supposed to be strong, and you're not supposed to be human and actually feel it and have these feelings and emotions. So I agree too. Like, I do feel like that Black women, we have a particular standard that, you know, we automatically just have, and it works for you and it works against you. And I do agree too, like sometimes that can get in the way of relationships that you may have, you know, with a lover or like your husband or your boyfriend or something like that, to where they may feel, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? They may feel intimidated by your strength. And not to say that a woman has to dumb herself down to be with anyone, but also too, I personally just feel like naturally, sometimes it is the man's role to lead. And so if he is a great leader and all those things he's supposed to be, you can all, like, you just constantly bump heads if you're also trying to be the leader as well. I do feel like there's a time and a place for it. I feel like it can work for us. It can work against us. There's so many different scenarios and different ways that it could be beneficial to us, or it can actually kind of hurt us.
And it does. It kind of stops people from even wanting to step in, you know, because it's like, if I'm picking up something heavy and someone sees and it's like, oh, I think that's heavy, like, do you need help? And because we believe our own stereotype, you know, we'll say, no, I got it, I don't need help, knowing that we're struggling. So the person who sees us now believes, okay, she's fine, she has it, she's got it, you know. And so when they see us pick up something else that's heavy, then I'm gonna ask this time, because they know, okay, she has it, she's got it. So it kind of off-puts other people from even wanting to or attempting to help us, because they just assume that we're strong and we have it, and we don't, you know. And and with men, one thing that I've learned from having like all these brothers and my father and all of that and relationships, men need to feel needed. Like, everyone wants to feel needed, but it's a very serious thing for men. And if men feel like you can handle everything on your own, like, they're not feeling needed, and they will remove themselves from the equation, you know? So it does, it affects us in every area. So we have to relinquish some of that control, of course, with someone who is worthy and someone who's able to handle things. We can't, you know, of course, relinquish control and then someone drops the ball. They have to be, they have to be able to handle it. And they have to trust that we trust them to do that. So it's a difficult and kind of a delicate situation, but I do feel like us believing this stereotype about ourselves is very detrimental in a lot of different ways.
I was going to say, I'll admit, I am a little guilty about that myself sometimes. Like, I have moments where it's like, okay, let me just do it myself, because I don't have the patience to wait for somebody else. I know exactly how I want it done. I don't feel like being a team player right now and be all about that teamwork. I'm about to just do it by myself mm-hmm. and knock it out the park. But it eventually it does happen where like, okay, that winds up being like your approach to a right. lot of different things. And people can feel intimidated mm-hmm. and threatened by it. And some people can say, well, she does need my help. And then when you actually do need the help, they're not thinking about approaching you because they kind of know what you're already going to say, what right. your response would be. So yeah, I know, like just us talking about it now, like I'm thinking about certain things that I've kind of been through or like experiences even at work or like with friends mm-hmm. or like, you know, exes in the past or guys I've dealt with in the past, just, you know, not where I could have like toned it down a little bit, but where I could have just maybe did a little bit differently or maybe just more right. open and more welcoming to the help that somebody mm-hmm. was trying to give me. So yeah, it is something that like, it's kind of like a case by case thing, depending right. on the scenario. But at the same time, it is something that, you know, I think we as Black women, we should definitely look at. And it's not to say that, you know, we have to dumb ourselves down, because like you said, we don't want to submit or kind of be that way for someone mm-hmm. who's not worthy of it or who can't even right. do the basics that mm-hmm. the man is supposed to
exactly.
do. So, or everyone is like, everybody's just messed right. up at that
yeah,
point.
That's nonsense. Yeah, I would be better off doing it by myself. And that's the thing, like, you know, you have to,
yeah,
it has to be with someone who can, like, who can handle things, you know? And I feel like a good indicator of that is like whether or not a person has a word. Like, to me, that's everything. You know, if someone tells me that they're going to mm-hmm. do something or they're going to be somewhere, and they don't do it, you're not the one for me right. to be handling anything, because I can't even trust what you say at this point.
Right.
You know, so I feel like that's one thing. You right. know, I know I've had friends that have dealt with people who have said that they're going to be someplace and then he flakes. You know, and if you want to continue to deal with, I'm like, no,
right.
he's not. You know, having a word is everything, and that will tell you a lot about whether or not, you know, the type of man that you're dealing with.
Right. That's very true too. Yeah. Like thinking back and looking back at certain situations. Yeah. There are different like mm-hmm. signals and, you know, not necessarily red flags, but like just little signals and indicators in the beginning right. of everything where you could kind of see like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then later on you're like, yeah, okay. Now I see why it didn't
right.
work out. But, mm-hmm. definitely. All right. So talking about all of that now, and talking about being a Black woman, one of the things that's like super important to us is our mm-hmm. hair. don't touch our hair. We're not on display. We've got so many textures and curls and types and all of that good stuff. And your hair is always very nice.
Thank
when
you.
I watch your videos, I'm always like, oh my God, it's always so nice. Whether it's braided, it's out in the afro, you got it slicked back or whatever. So you make your own hair products or do you
I
buy
do.
Them?
I make the majority of what I use okay. on my hair and skin. I do still buy like as far as like gel is concerned, like hair gel and edge control, I don't make that, so I do buy that. But mm-hmm. the
okay.
shampoo and conditioner, I make it, and any type of moisturizer that I'm gonna put in my hair, I make that as well. Because going along
wow.
with like the same along the same line as the earrings, you know, I want anything that I put on my body to be good for me. Like, I don't like the idea of chemicals mm-hmm. and, you know, hormone disruptors and sulfates and all types of stuff that's normally in products. I don't like the idea of putting that on my skin,
right.
you know. So that was the,
right.
the reason why I started that, is because, there, you know, I used to go and, you know, spend a lot of money on skincare and all these brushes and these high fancy brands and stuff, and they're just full of chemicals, and my face would be all irritated and red, and I'm like, this is not how it's supposed to be. So I was like, let me just make some stuff from right. nature as it was intended, you know.
And so do you sell your hair stuff too, or you just make it for yourself?
I sell the skincare products. So so I do have a website, it's
okay.
called jovishabeauty.com, where I sell the skincare, but the hair care products like the shampoo and the conditioner, it is something that I'm that mm-hmm. I make for myself. I did initially sell it, but I'm
okay.
Just changing up a couple of things with the operations as far as the business is concerned. But I'll start back once I have more hands on deck, I will add those things back into the product inventory.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I've done a few like DIY, do it yourself, hair care, like, because mm-hmm. my hair is natural too, and I'm a hair product junkie. Like, a lot of people will buy like clothes and this and that and a third. I shop at the most cheapest place for clothes. I can buy a shirt for $5 and be happy, content. But the hair products, I'm like, I'm at Target, I'm at CVS. I've got like, right now I've got like 5 different bottles of different mm-hmm. leave-in conditioner sprays under my sink mm-hmm. for a wash and go. Like, it's crazy. So like, I splurge on those things. And I did at one point, I was doing a lot of DIY stuff, and I did do one. It was avocado, banana, and coconut oil. And I blended it in the blender, and that mm-hmm. was like a deep conditioner. And it smelled really nice. Actually, I tasted it before I put it in my hair. And I was like, oh, it tastes mm-hmm. pretty good. Tasted okay. And then the banana is what made it a little bit sweet. And but it wound up just being such a mess because mm-hmm. it was so slippery that I had just like avocado. It was just like splashes on the bathroom wall. And then days later, I'm like, what is this on my wall? I'm like, oh my God, this is the food deep conditioner. Right. It just didn't look right. So, but yeah, like those types of things I've also done for DIY. I've done mm-hmm. the flaxseed hair gel, where I've just boiled the flaxseeds mm-hmm. and I made the hair gel. And that, I'll say, those were definitely something I was always doing when I did my wash and goes. I don't know why I stopped, but I did. I kind of mm-hmm. just fell off from doing it. But I do notice that, like, when I was using the flaxseed gel for my hair, my wash and goes, my hair was actually yeah. a little bit stronger. And so I think the flaxseeds were good mm-hmm. for, like, protein they or are. Something like that. But yeah, so that's kind of as much as I've done in terms of hair care and, like, mm-hmm. you know, what's in my kitchen. But I am kind of researching, like, other little things you can do, other little tricks, and, you know, with your fruits and your vegetables, or maybe some of your herbs, essential and oils, and things.
Essential oils, are really a big part of things for me. Essential oils and like steeping mm-hmm. plants in water, like that's like one of the foundations of the business is the inclusion mm-hmm. of like aloe plants and rosemary, lavender, and these are things that you know that I grow myself and put into the products because I don't even like the possibility of things being grown with like pesticides or whatever. I don't like the idea of chemicals,
right?
You know, man-made chemicals inside of things causing problems to people's body and skin. So so those type of things will help as well. But yeah, essential oils, they really add like another level to things. Like, so if you are, you know, mixing up some things, one, like the ones that we swear mm-hmm. by are rosemary oil is very effective in like repairing cells and hair growth. Same with peppermint oil. They found that peppermint oil was more effective at re-stimulating the follicle than Rogaine was.
And I have peppermint oil in my bathroom. Mm-hmm. I actually just use it to put on peppermint. My skin sometimes. Just like a little dab here and there, but I've never tried it.
Yeah, the conditioner that I make for my hair has a good amount of peppermint oil, and it's so much to the point where my scalp tingles, like I've just brushed my teeth when I wash my hair, and like the whole house will mm-hmm. smell like peppermint. So, yeah. But peppermint oil is really effective. Orange oil is good as well for adding like shine and body and luster to your hair.
Okay. I have to try that one. I've never mm-hmm. tried that one. I've seen it. Yeah. But orange I've never oil
tried really, that. Is really good for that as well. And of course, tea tree oil is good for hair growth because it, you know, we have a microbiome like all over our skin, in our mouth, you know, in other places as well, in our gut. And mm-hmm. so the microbiome on our skin, if there's an overgrowth of fungus, it's going to make it harder for your hair to grow. And tea tree oil is like very antifungal and it will correct like that imbalance. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I remember when my daughter had, when she was a little bit smaller, she had dry mm-hmm. scalp, really bad dry scalp. And I took her to the dermatologist. They had prescribed mm-hmm. some medicated oil, didn't do anything. And then I was talking to one of my friends and she's into the oils and stuff like mm-hmm. that too for hair care and all that. And she was like, get some tea tree oil and it should help it. And, you know, it's antifungal. And I got some. And like after a couple of days, it just kind of cleared up. And I was like, oh. So like now I always mm-hmm. have like tea tree oil in my bathroom. Like luckily we don't have dry scalp like that to that severe anymore. But I just have it, and like once in a blue moon, I'll be like, come on, let me put this on your scalp real quick. Or like, you know, the same thing for me. Like, you know, just something to do real quick, just in case I'm mm-hmm. just trying to grow or whatever. So, yeah. But yeah, oh yeah, recently too, I did actually, over the summer, I had aloe plant. So I'm vegan, plant-based, mm-hmm. I'm plant-based vegan. And a lot of the stuff I do is more for like the intake with smoothies or herbal mm-hmm. teas that I'll make and stuff like that. And so I always use aloe pretty much in my smoothies. And, you know, I used to sometimes just eat mm-hmm. a piece of aloe. It's very bitter, but I would just like eat a piece of aloe every day. And I've always seen videos about how it's good for your skin and your hair, but I've actually never tried
it. Yeah, it's very good for the hair and the skin. Aloe. Yeah. That's like in the majority of the products, it's definitely aloe. And in the conditioner that I make myself, I mm-hmm. put a great amount of aloe in it. Blend it up. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of aloe. Those oils that I said, aloe, rosemary oil, peppermint oil, orange oil, mm-hmm. and tea tree oil, and also coconut oil. I'll have honey in it as well. And I don't know, probably some other stuff, but... Yeah, I blend all that up.
I know. Yeah. So I'm like that too. When I'm in the kitchen making stuff, I just kind of just put everything at once. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this looks good. This looks good. Like sometimes that's how I do it. But yeah, the aloe, yeah, it is good for your hair. I tried it in my hair and it was mm-hmm. nice and it felt great after. Okay, so you're very well rounded. You've got music, public speaking, jewelry making, all that stuff. You know, you're welcome. And then what do you consider yourself? I would guess that you consider yourself more of an artist.
Yes, I would consider myself more of an artist above everything. I know this isn't really a title, but my mm-hmm. self-proclaimed title is a lover.
Yeah.
That's like lover is normally in my bio somewhere around there mm-hmm. because, that's just what I am. You know, and I feel like that kind of encompasses everything. You know, I love my people, so I speak on what I feel will be beneficial to us. I love music, so I create it, you know, and I just feel like that kind of encompasses everything. But second to that, I suppose mm-hmm. artists would be the most appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. And so I think earlier you had mentioned that, you know, you have other ventures coming up, like you're working on a podcast. And so maybe mm-hmm. people can expect that soon. How did you come up with that idea? Was it something where you just woke up one day and was like, you know what, I'm going to do a podcast? Or did somebody approach you with it and you was like, that sounds like a good idea? How did you kind of come to terms with like that something?
Yeah, well, the podcast has been something that people have been asking me for a long time now. For about, I don't know, maybe 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I've yet to do it because I just, you know, doing so many other things. But I was approached with this particular podcast opportunity. And I felt like it would be something beneficial to do. And it's not something that I have to control. You know, I'm learning more and more so to delegate and not have to be over everything. And so the wheels are turning with the podcast and I'm just over here minding my business and just adding in my 2 cents here and there to the process, you know. So that's why that particular that's why it's becoming a thing, because it's not something that I have to be over. It's something that I'm definitely of course going to be a part of, mm-hmm. but I don't have to be involved in every detail of it, which is perfect for me and what I need right now. But I am excited for it.
I'm excited for it too. I think I remember when you had posted that about a podcast or something, and a lot of people were commenting saying like, yeah, a podcast, like, and I was like, oh, I was saying, I think I even commented too, like, yeah, do a podcast. But then I just felt like it would just be natural for you because you speak so well and you have your videos and all that. And I'm like, oh, she's going to do a podcast. And like, I can see it coming.
Thank you. So. I appreciate that. Yeah. I think it'll be a good thing. I'm excited for it. I'm going to have to be traveling to do it, but I'm still excited for it nevertheless. Mm-hmm. So when it, there should probably be some things posted about it. Maybe in November, because hopefully we can get it started by then. There's like the set is still being built for it right now, but it should be finished by the end of this month, so I'm sure we could at least get some photos or something out by November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. That's exciting.
Yeah,
it's really exciting. All right, so now we're gonna go on to the next segment of the podcast, and this is kind of where I include the audience. It's called, mm-hmm. it's a segment called Say What's On Your Mind. And this is when someone will email me or DM me or inbox me, a dilemma they need advice on, a question they need an answer to, just their opinion on something. And I'll just read it out loud. They'll remain anonymous. Mm-hmm. So I won't say like who sent it or anything. And we just kind of talk about it and give like our opinion on it or like our two cents on it. So someone sent me this, not too long ago. They said, you know, with relationships being a hot topic right now, what are your views on courtship, dating, and the building of relationships? So I guess I kind of understand that to mean like, do you see a difference in the courtship, the dating, and building relationships, or do they all seem the same to you?
I believe there's a difference with courtship and dating now. There's definitely this, I wouldn't even say illusion of choice, because it's the reality of choice that I feel like generations before us didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it harder to be committed, right, because you continue to see other options presented before you, and not only presented, but they may right. become tangible, you know? So I feel like it is a little harder nowadays to have a committed relationship. And then, you know, with feminism being the thing that it is, I mean, I understand the initial need for it, but mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of killed chivalry under the guise of like being equal. Like, I don't know about what other women want, but I prefer for a man to, you know, open the door for me, pick me up on when we go on a date, to walk on the outside of the street, and all those type of things that I feel like men should do. So it definitely has changed, but there are still, I feel like, people who understand the idea of what it is supposed to be and respect the courtship process and, you know, want something real, want something that they can, you know, a real commitment, you know, but it definitely is different.
Yeah, I was going to say, it in my opinion, too, I feel like it is different. Like, if you know exactly what you're looking for, and you know that you're looking to be committed, and you're serious about meeting people, then I do feel like, you know, when it comes mm-hmm. to the courtship and the dating piece of it, those two pieces are taken more seriously by an individual. And then 9 times out of 10... like, I kind of feel like the dating would come first. You know, you'd meet them, you'd go on some dates, mm-hmm. you get to know each other, that kind of thing. And then if you really felt like, you know, I really like this person, or we're really hitting it off, or we're vibing, the gentleman right. would be the one doing the courting. Then it would be, you know, more of the gentleman mm-hmm. things. I mean, still dating and going out and doing activities together, but more just courting you and just more making it all about you and just right. kind of more exclusive. And mm-hmm. I would say more thoughtful in the things that he's doing for you.
And intentional, you know, it's not just seeing where this goes.
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know, we both, you know, have the same right. idea of what it is that we want. You know, we want to be in a committed relationship. And we are dating and courting each other to see if we're compatible, not just to see where things go and all, right. you know, and all that, which is a very
right.
common right. thing nowadays. People just want to see where things go. They don't want to, you know, deal with relationship issues. Right. You know, they, you know, don't want to put any type of titles on anything because they want to have that out readily available. Right. That, you know, well, we weren't, you know, it wasn't official or whatever people want to say. So they can, you know, just, it gives them the luxury to do what they want to do.
Right.
So, you know, it, you know, it has changed, yeah. But I feel like that is the difference in it. When you get two people who are intentional about each other. And I feel like, with the way the society is and how people are not, as self-sufficient, you know, economically as like the generations prior to us, we're finding like love later and later in life. You know, I feel like people don't start getting serious about being in committed relationships until they're well into, like, somewhat into their 30s, because 20s is play around time.
Right.
You know, for a lot of people, there are some people who are serious, right, and, you know, right, they do want to be committed and married and whatnot, but, you know, it's like people start simmering down and deciding that they want something real once they get in their 30s. Yeah. You know?
I was going to say, I'm kind of guilty of that, like, seeing where it goes, go with the flow, when it comes to dating a little bit. And more so for me, I'm that way, not in a selfish reason, to where I can just drop somebody when I feel like it, but more so just because I'm so busy, like, with the kids and with work and everything, that I don't always have the capacity to be for someone else outside of my kids and then at the same time still be for me. So sometimes for me, that works for me to be like, you know, let's kind of just see what happens with this. You know what I mean? And if it's effortless and it's great, then we can do it. And if it's something that I feel is like, just takes so much energy out of me, or if it turns into like something kind of stressful, then I do find myself kind of like, okay, I can't entertain this much longer, or this is just going to have to be like a friend kind of thing. And like, that's it. But I think like, you know, I think it also too depends on what people have going on in their lives and what they kind of can allow. Because just as a mom, like, just a single mom of three, like, you know, my free time is like when the kids go to bed. And, you know, I still got to go to bed at night. So do I want to share that time with somebody every single night? Or do I really want to be selfish sometimes with my time and just have for me and for things that I'm into and things that I want to do? And so some of my experiences have been where I've encountered guys who understand that and they're okay with it. And some guys who say they're okay with it. And then later down the line, it becomes an issue. So
I think it's
like,
a difference between those two things.
But yeah,
like, it's a difference between time management and dealing with someone who is intentional. Like, you can be intentional about wanting a real relationship and a real commitment and still have to, you know, have to understand the type of time that a person is on, basically, you know, because I'm the same way. I don't have children, but I am very busy. Like, it's not, I don't waste time. Like, I'm not one to just be sitting around not doing nothing. Like, that's not a thing, you know? So whoever I'm dealing with, they have to understand that. But I'm still intentional. Like, I want, like, I know what I want out of a relationship. Like, if we're going to be dealing with each other, there's some sort of commitment that I'm wanting out of this. I don't just want to deal with somebody for the sake of dealing with somebody. So I feel like that's the difference there, because you and I, like, I feel like we're in the same boat in regards to, like, not having, you know, we can't have a lot of our time demanded of, you know, but that's different than being intentional. Because while I still have this idea of like, I can't spend every moment with you because I got stuff to do. I still am intentional, and I feel like that's important. Like,
gotta
you have
keep
to have
going.
That in order for any relationship or friendship
to
be good. We have to have our own lives. And I feel like that's where we mess up. You know, when we get in relationships, we have a tendency, especially women, we have a tendency to make this other person our whole life. And then if things don't turn out the way that we want them to, we have to put our life back together. You know, we have to reconnect with friends that we didn't spend as much time with. And men are better at balancing that. Like, they'll have a relationship, but they'll still have their friends. They'll still have their hobbies and their things that they do. you know, to where if things, you know, if a breakup happens, they still have their life, you know, and they're not having to put their whole life back together again. So it is necessary for us to have the things that we do. And these are things that we have to take care of and handle. And it is our own responsibility. But I don't feel like that's the same as wanting something intentional, you know, or the lack of wanting something intentional with someone.
Right. Right. Yeah, you said it. I think you said it perfectly. Mm-hmm. Just our time being demanded of. that was it for me. I never found the words for it before until you said that.
Because I can't. Exactly, like, it was time where I gave, like, I was out with my friends and I gave this guy my number. And, like, the next day he hit me up, which is fine. You could text me good morning or whatever. That's nice. But he had called me several times throughout the day. Like,
yeah. You know,
called me earlier in the day and then later on, and I'm like, all right,
stop.
Like, I don't know about you, but I work, like, I have things to do, like, and then it made me wonder, like, what are you not doing to where you have all this time to be hitting me up, you know? Like,
I've been in that situation too, and I was like, God, this is so annoying. And then when I thought about it,
like, are you working?
Why do you have all this free time? Or, like, you know, or if you're not working, you don't sleep, or
you should be busy doing something, you know,
something.
Like, so I, everyone should have the things that they're working on, period.
Right. Definitely. All right. Well, that was the question. I thought it was great. So I don't have anything else planned for this episode. I thought it was a great episode that we talked about a lot of different things. And I think to sum it up, for everyone who's listening, I think to sum it up, just kind of knowing who you are and just being able to tap into yourself. And I think you're a perfect example of, like, you tapping into one thing as an individual for yourself, but that one thing kind of, like, opens up other things that you're interested in as well. You know what I mean? And so tapping into your creativity can open so many doors for you, and sometimes things you don't even think that it would. So I hope that, you know, everybody who's listening got something from this.
Likewise.
I had a great time.
I enjoyed this podcast.
Thank you. I definitely got something from this, and we definitely talked about your upcoming project,
which
I'm very excited to listen for. And just, I'm sure everybody knows, but just where can they follow you?
Well, my social media handles are all the same. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, it's all the same. It's at Erica Lachey, and that's ERICALESHAI.
Okay. And then you have a website for your jewelry.
Yeah, so the website for my jewelry is ericalachey.com. Okay. Spelled the same way, ericalesHAI.com. There's also, you can also get to the hair care and skincare on that website as well.
Okay, awesome. All right. So everyone, thank you for tuning in. I hope you guys got something from this episode. And until next time, you guys stay blessed and be well.